but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many sorrows. We've been talking about how to live a life of victory. And we come today to something that is almost never spoken of. And that is the area of contentment. In fact, we are told repeatedly and constantly to never be content. The house isn't big enough. The car isn't new enough. The wife isn't young enough. You need to get a new one. We have sayings about that. He who dies with the most toys wins. What on earth do you win? As Billy Graham used to say, there aren't any U-Hauls behind hearses. You know, one of the most sobering things is to actually do an inventory on someone who is dead. All this stuff that they spent hundreds and thousands of dollars to fill their house with, and what do? You call the Salvation Army to come and truck it away. You know what the difference between a new car and a junker is? You know what the difference between a new car and a junker? You know that new car smell? Yeah, payment. About 10 years. I love it when you buy, oh, it's got this, it's wonderful. Ever go into a car dealership, and man, they will tell you, and then you show them your car that 5 or 10 years ago, you know, was, oh, it's got. And they go, well, this doesn't have much in it, does it? It's pretty good. Paul says, godliness with contentment . We have to understand one thing. This is not a peripheral issue to the gospel. This is not some secondary issue. This isn't something that's out there. Okay, yeah, well, Pastor, it's really nice that you're giving us this kind of little encouragement on this issue, but you know, let's get back to the meat and potatoes of the gospel. This is meat and potatoes of the gospel. Let's go back to the first announcing of the gospel. John the Baptist shows up on the scene, Luke chapter 3. And he begins to announce the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now remember, Matthew tells us the law and the prophets prophesied how long? Until Paul? Until the book of Acts? Until the day of Pentecost? When? We've got people running around saying, well, you know, everything before Paul is just kind of old. They try to throw the Gospels out. They do all kinds of crazy things. Say, that doesn't apply to the day. That was for the Jews. What did Jesus say? The law and the prophets, the Old Testament, prophesied until John. John was the beginning of the gospel. And look at what it says in Luke chapter 3. Luke chapter 3. John the Baptist arrives and he begins to announce the gospel. Verse 7, John said to the crowds coming out to be baptized by him, you brood of vipers, who warned you to flee from the coming wrath? Produce fruit in keeping with repentance. Do not begin to say to yourselves, we have Abraham as our father. He was preaching today, he'd be saying things like, do not say to yourselves, I went forward at an altar call, or I prayed a prayer. For I tell you that out of these stones God can raise up children for Abraham. The axe is already at the root of the trees, and every tree that does not produce good fruit will be cut down and thrown into the fire. What should we do then? The crowd asked. Now, if we had people, and we don't, in almost any churches in America, crowds of people trembling saying, what should we do then? We have to chase them down, hog-tie them, and what would we answer? Well, this is what John answered. The man who has two tunics should share with him who has none. The one who has food should do the same. Tax collectors also came to be baptized. Teacher, what should we do? Don't collect more than you are required to. Then some soldiers asked him, and what should we do? He replied, do not extort money, do not accuse people falsely, be content with your pay. Be content. That was the gospel that was preached. Be content. Don't think you gotta get more. No person who is unsaved can ever be truly content. It is impossible for an unsaved person to be content. Because for the unsaved person, they have to have it today. If I don't go on that Disney vacation now, I'll never get it. If I don't see the Grand Canyon today, I'll never get there. I don't get that cruise, or that raise, or that house, or that, I'll never have it. It is only the saints that can sing what we sang today, I'm satisfied with. Just a cottage below. Because if we truly claim we are creatures of eternity, get this, because maybe you haven't understood this. And let me say it this way. It's maybe different than you've heard it. Your goal for the rest of your life, how many years do you have left? And I know that everybody's going to say the right answer, which is, we don't know. I could be dead today. And that's true, isn't it? But here's the other side of it. If I'm not dead today, I know how many years I have left. I'm 55 years old. In 15 years, that's less than I've been here, I'll be 70. In the years I've been here, I'll be 76, almost 77. My father died at 76. Do I have 25 years? Maybe. That would make me 80. Do I have 30 years? I hope not. That'd make me 85. God forbid, do I have 35 years? 90 years? No way! I may have to live that long. I don't have much more than that. I certainly don't have left. They call me middle-aged. I don't plan on being around at 110. Do you know what I have to do? I have to survive the next 25, maybe 30 years in godliness. That's the only task I have left. I don't have to accumulate a fortune. My kids hope I do. But I don't have to do that. I have to just get through. How many years do you have to get through until it's all over for you? You count your life that way. The real goal, you know, there's a certain point, maybe it's my age, maybe it's not. There's a certain point in a race where all you have to do is keep the pace and keep running. Just keep thinking about the finish line. The finish line. The finish line. You know, that's really all that any of us have to do. We get all this other stuff and it leads to discontentment. Years ago when we first got married, my wife used to say, you know, we better save or we're going to end up in a house trailer. My answer was always, great, I think they're pretty nice. I always wanted to see the inside of a tornado, and you know they're tornado magnets. What is it that brings contentment? You see, we talked last week about how anxiety says two things, one of two things, or both of two things about us. It says either I believe God is not able, or I believe God does not care. Contentment is the fruit of those two things. When I believe that God is able and God cares, I can have nothing but contentment. Does God know your address? If He wants you to have something, does He know where to find you? You think God's up in heaven going, oh, you know, I had something for Tim or Bob or John. I wish I could find him. You ever look at something and instead of saying, oh, if I only had, say, if God wanted me to have that, I'd have it. The fact that I don't have it says God doesn't want me to have it. You see, you cannot believe that God cares and God is able and not be content. It's impossible. That's what Paul's talking about in Philippians chapter 4. Look with me at Philippians chapter 4. Sometimes what we don't memorize is more important than what we do. We memorize Philippians 4:13, but my God is able. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Do you know how we usually apply that? You see, there's an antecedent to that. When it says all things, what's he talking about? We usually, I can get that right. I can get ahead. I can make something of my life. I can prosper. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. The context is verses 11 and 12. What's he say there? I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. What are your circumstances? Well, Pastor, you don't know my circumstances. Okay, let me ask you, is there anyone here who has circumstances that are different than any circumstance? Anybody got something that's not covered by any or whatever circumstances? Okay, then Paul's saying, wherever we're at, he says, I have learned to be content. Now, I want you to notice one thing. He goes on, let me go on. I have learned the content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation. Well, you know, maybe like these prosperities guys say, Paul was just having a bad day, he had a headache. No, he says, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want, I can do everything. What's the everything? I can live in plenty, or I can live in want. I can do everything. Now, we need to understand some things. First of all, he says there is a secret. Look at what he says in verse 12. He says, I have learned the secret. There's a secret to this. Not something that's intuitive. Not something we'll figure out on our own. It's not something that you just get automatically. He says there's a secret to contentment. Second of all, he says that we have to learn that secret. It's something that must be learned. Let me give you a little hint about this. It can't be learned intellectually. It's not something. Not like that. It can only be learned through practice. There's no substitutes for it. Do you understand why we are so discontent today? It struck me because my father was the prototype, was prototypical of his generation. My father was the man that worked 80 hours a week, who determined that he would provide for his family. My father never graduated high school. He had to drop out in the 12th grade because he could not pass English. I don't know for sure why, but my guess is, since I've seen his writing, on the rare occasions he wrote, that he had what we would diagnose today as some type of dyslexia. He taught himself to read, and he loved to read, but it must have been a nightmare for him to learn to read. He could never write. The only thing I've ever seen him write is his name, and once in a great while, if there was no one around, a check, if he had to write a check. But if I was around or someone else that he trusted was around, he would have them write out the check and he'd simply sign it. That's how bad he was at writing. He had some form of dyslexia, I'm sure of it. Didn't stop him. He went out. Son of a sharecropper who'd never had a dime to his name, He went out and made a good living for himself and his family. He was born in 1919. He came of age. He was a teenager in the middle of the Great Depression. He was 20 years old when Hitler invaded Poland and then France. Signed up for the military and was rejected because of health issues. And I don't know how many times he'd say to me things like, you know, when I was a kid, all we had to play with was a hoop and a stick. Maybe some of you had parents that age that can remember those kind of things. You know how we joke about when I was a kid, I walked to school, you know, 8 miles uphill both ways and snow this deep. My father, some of you have been to where my mother lives. When my father lived there when he was a young child, teenager. He and his two brothers shoveled the dirt road from where my mother lives, a mile and a tenth to the hard road, every time it snowed so that they could get in to collect the milk from his father's sharecropped ranch. Can you imagine shoveling a mile and a tenth of snow? I think I've got a big driveway. And they didn't have a snowblower or a tractor to do it. And my father would always say things like this. He'd say, you know, when I was a kid, we didn't have anything. So I have worked hard all my life so that you never have to go through what I went through. That was the attitude of his generation, and it ruined us. Ruined us. Our job is to not to protect our children from every hardship. We want to do that. I remember when I was a kid, man, if I got in trouble in school, my fault, the other guy's fault, nobody's fault, I don't care. If I got in trouble in school, just, unjust, I don't care anything about that. The last thing on earth I would do is go home and tell my parents. Because I knew what would happen if I told my parents. Anything the teacher did to me would look like a Sunday school picnic compared to what my mother would do to me. You send home a low report card, and the parents are pounding on the door going, what did you do to my kid? My job to protect my kid. And you know what that does? It breeds discontent. I need every problem solved in this life. I need it all given to me. Paul said, I've learned a secret. The secret is not if I have a lot, I'm happy. The secret is I can be happy. I can be content with nothing. Now, there's some of us who are struggling right now financially. Isn't that true? Anybody here who has nothing? Anybody here who didn't eat yesterday? Show of hands. Anybody here who hasn't eaten, who won't eat today? Show of hands. Paul says, I've been there. And you can be content even there. What? Anybody here, it was 40 degrees when I woke up this morning. I don't know what the low was. Anybody here wake up with icicles on their nose? Anybody here have to walk to church 4 or 5 miles? Yeah. Paul says, I know what it is to be in want, yet I'm content. What's his secret? Let me give you some principles of his secret. Number one, it's otherworldliness. Paul understood that you have to just get through this life. This life isn't about getting all you want. Because you know what? You never do. Let's be real honest. We're not a church of lawyers and doctors and millionaires. And we probably never will be. But if we were, do you think that they're any more content than the person who has what we have or the person who has less than we have? You see, you can never get enough in this world. As Nelson Rockefeller said when he was running for vice president to replace Spiro Agnew, I asked him, you have $300 million, what today would easily be $3 or $4 billion. Now, do you understand what $1 billion is? If I had $1 billion, just $1 billion, and never made a penny on it, no interest, nothing, I could spend $1 million a week for the next 20 years before it was exhausted. So that means if he had the equivalent of three or four billion dollars for the next 60 to 80 years, he could spend $1 million a week and not run out of money. And they asked him, what does it take to be happy? Just a little bit more. You can never get enough in this life. Anybody here who's hurting today, can you remember back when you had less than you have now? Were you more miserable then? You got more than you used to have. Are you more miserable? Were you more miserable then? I remember when Kathy and I got married. We got married while I was still in seminary, and we didn't have two pennies to rub together. One of our relatives promised to get us a dining room set for our wedding present, and they didn't come through for a long time. It took them a long time to get it. We ate on a metal TV, metal typewriter stand for a year. I think I still got it in the basement. Maybe I got rid of it. I don't know. It was one of these $19.99 specials that you put together yourself. We've got two tables now. And they're both piled so high we don't know what to do with them. That makes you more content? You see, you can never have enough in this world. Paul understood the secret that we have to learn is otherworldliness. The devil whispered a lie into the church 50, 60 years ago, and the church bought it hook, line, and sinker, and they used to repeat it all the time. You don't even hear it anymore because it doesn't even need to be said. We've just internalized it so much that we don't even need to say it anymore. Here's what the lie was that the church bought. The lie was, you're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good. You don't hear anyone say that today because no one suffers, or few people suffer from the affliction of being heavenly minded these days. That's another lie. The only person that is any earthly good is the person that's heavenly minded. Years and years ago, there was a theologian that was, I'm not recommending his theology. He was part of that liberal thing that's out there. His name was Karl Barth. But he had enough wisdom that at the end of his life, he was doing a seminar for a group of seminary students, and I was one of those. I know what we're like, you know all the answers. And they were trying to, he had a question and answer time, and they were trying to stump him and show how smart and intelligent they were. And this one pimply-faced young man stands up and says, "Dr. Barth, what is the most profound thought that you have ever thought?" He began to hum under his breath this song, "Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so." And one of the students, upset that he would think something simple like that, said, "Well, Dr. Barth, is not this talk of heaven just pie in the sky by and by?" Karl Barth said, "Well, the first question you have to ask is, if heaven is pie in the sky by and by, you have to ask yourself, is the pie real?" See, if I believe that eternity is real, what do I need in this life? What do I need? Look at verse 15. I'm sorry, verse 13. "I can do everything through him who gives me strength." Here's the question that really raises is, is God enough? You know, the Bible says, "At thy right hand there are," how's that end? In the Psalm, "pleasures forevermore." Do you know how in our worldliness much of the church pictures that? Here's God, and here's this pile of pleasures, and somehow I have to whittle my way through God to get to the pleasures. And if I just learn the secrets, listen to some of these guys out there about how to whittle through God, I can get myself to those pleasures. Isn't what that means at all. The pleasure is God Himself. There's not an angel or saint in heaven going, "God, will you just let me behind the throne to get to that stuff so I can get out of here for a while?" Here's the question. Is God enough? Do I need that shiny car? Or having a car that gets me there and gets me home, is that enough? Thank God today I have a car that when I push the button or turn the key, it comes on most of the time. And when it doesn't, it's usually something simple like the battery. I remember my first car, my little MGB. And my MGB was an old style four-cylinder, and it had a flywheel that came off of the motor. And the starter motor kicked into that, but because it was a four-cylinder, that flywheel always stopped at one of two points whenever you turned the car off. And so the flywheel from the starter always came in on one of two spots on that thing, and it ground off the gears. And once in a while, about every 10th or 12th time, you'd turn the key and that flywheel would come in and jam. And you'd have to get out with a metal pipe and get down under the engine and take a big hammer and slam on the starter to break it loose, and then you could get in and start it. And I remember we had been to a service, and oh, it had been a great service. Our youth group had been there, and we were coming home, and I'd parked my car at someone's house, and it was pouring rain, and here I am in my good suit with my white shirt, my tie, and man, I come home and I'm thinking, oh God, that flywheel. And it was raining, you know, that kind of rain that they say, raining cats and dogs. And I jump out of the car and dive right into that MGB and pull the door shut. I'm going, oh God, oh God, oh God. Boom, boom, it started up. I'm going, oh, thank you, God, this would not be the night. I back out of the driveway and start down. And it was one of those old-style carburetor engines. It wasn't warm at all. When I got to the red light, when I pushed in the clutch, it stalled instantly. I'm going, oh God, oh God, oh God, just one more time. Snap! Peel off my coat. I'm looking at my white shirt. No light under the hood, no hood light, no flashlight. I'm just going to have to feel down along that greasy 10-year-old motor. And if you know anything about MGs, they leak oil like a sieve. Peel off my... Now here I am in my suit pants, naked to the waist. Feeling down along, just the rain's pelting down. I don't have a car like that anymore. You know what? It always got me home. Are you willing to be content? How about with a car that doesn't start every 10th time you turn the key? If I believe that my ultimate goal is heaven, I can live with a car like that. Look with me at Hebrews. Oh boy, it's time to go. Hebrews 13:5. Hebrews 13:5. We always read the end of 13:5. If I didn't ask you, you would probably know the end of Hebrews 13:5. Even if you didn't know where it was found, you could probably fairly well quote it. But here's the beginning of Hebrews 13:5. Keep your lives free from the love of money. What's the warning here? Stay as far away from the love of money as it is possible to stay. You know, the Bible never warns anyone ever anywhere to stay away from need. It says, my God will supply all your needs, but it doesn't say, keep away from need, yet we run from need like it's the plague. We prepare all our lives to make sure we have no need, but the Bible does say, run away from the love of money. Now let me ask you, what is it in your life that makes you love stuff? Are you running away from it? Keep your lives free from the love of money and be, what's that next word? Content. Content with what you have. Do you understand that most of our contentment, our discontentment, comes from what we don't have? If I only had. Why? Because. Here's the reason. Because God has said, never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. Do we believe that? Is God enough? Is God enough? Let's go back to where we started and then we're done. 1 Timothy chapter 6. But godliness with contentment is great gain. Verse 6. For we brought nothing into the world, we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Look at the next verse, verse 9. People who want to get rich. Not getting rich, not rich people. Wanting it. You know how many Christians I've talked to that have told me about how they have plans to get people in the church rich? I can remember sitting beside people that were on fire for Jesus seemingly, but man, they were also talking about their plan to get people, themselves and others in the church rich. Do you know how many of them last for Jesus Christ for more than a year or two or three? None of them. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap. You see, we're talking about godliness today. We're talking about holiness. We're talking about the victorious life. He says, there's where temptation lies, wanting to get rich. And into many foolish and harmful desires. Do you know how many people have followed stupid things that anybody with half a brain would say, this is just dumb? Do you know how many people have proposed to me ideas that, man, they were just, you could see it in their eyes, just that little green monster in their eyes. It's going to work. Pyramid schemes and on and on and on. And you step back and you go, dude, do you see what you're... Foolish and harmful desires that what? That plunge men into ruin and destruction. See, this is not a side issue. This is an issue of ruin and destruction. It happens slow. That glacier slowly until boom, it falls into the sea. It's that cancer growing silently inside you. So all of a sudden, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Now, we know that part. Let's read the rest. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith. That's a pretty scary thought. Does that mean people might lose their salvation? I don't know. I certainly don't want to do it. Do you? Whatever it is, I don't want to be one. And he says there are some who have done it. And have pierced themselves with many griefs. Have pierced themselves with many griefs. How much of the grief that we carry is because we're not content? I've been talking to people, and you know, there are a lot of people that are dealing with anger issues right now. You know where anger comes from? A lot of times it comes from grief and frustration. They've pierced themselves with many griefs. Why? A lack of contentment. Because you see, if I'm looking for stuff in this world, people can steal it from me, can't they? I can lose it. I might have a great job today, but man, I can lose it tomorrow, can't I? Hey, that house? Man, I better have great insurance, because what could happen to that house tomorrow? Griefs. And they pile up in us. Nobody can steal my eternity. I don't care whether you believe you can be saved and lost or not. Whichever it is, nobody else can take it from me. Whether I can give it away or not is a different issue. But you can't steal my eternity from me. God doesn't have to have a Roman shield in the front yard. Boy, when I set my heart, and it doesn't have to be a mansion. I want to hold on to what I've got. Grief. Godliness with contentment is great gain. How content are you today?